It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, I love that saying because it's true, Austin Danforth. We are living that dream and we're taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Or you can watch us live on television at twitch.tv/1013thegame. So good morning if you're watching us on Twitch TV. Hope everybody's well today. Austin
That's
Danforth.
A bold move watching us
it
on
is.
Twitch.
It is just early in the morning. It's never pretty. It's not pretty mid-afternoon either, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But good morning, Austin Danforth.
Morning.
Have you a good week?
Yeah. Was it me or did it feel darker this week?
I mean, I know it
actually is darker, but like I had the hardest time getting out of bed like every day.
Yeah, it's been, I'll tell you why.
Every day.
Because every time you get a look out the window, it looks like it's mid-January and we're not even to Thanksgiving yet.
We got a little reprieve with a little rain.
Yeah, a little rain.
Melt some of that snow.
Big deal about the rain. I need some sun and some warmth.
You know what was funny? The sun came out at like 2:30 yesterday. And it
Take
was
a picture?
I should have though. Because by 3:30, it was like midnight. It was so gross. Sad. I was like, oh, it's beautiful out. What is this? By the time I was headed to the grocery store to pick up groceries, it was getting dark.
Tis the season for it to get dark at 3.
Yeah. Guess who was running before the sun came out when it was actually raining?
Oh,
Austin
you?
Danforth, the man over here. 655-6672 is the number to call, 802-655-6672 if you want to join our conversation today. Or you can text us live on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. What a show we have today coming on the next segment at 1020. We have Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe, Austin. We love Tara Sullivan. She is right now, she's primarily been covering the Patriots. So a lot of talk right now with the Patriots. Obviously, we'll get into that, but she can also talk some Red Sox with us. She's a former writer from the New York area. She used to work for the Bergen Records. So she's got insight on the Yankees and Giants and Jets as well. So a well-rounded interview with Tara Sullivan. She'll come on at 10:20. And then Ian Levy is coming out with us at 10:40. He's an NBA editor for fansided.com. He comes on all the time. And it's interesting. The NBA right now, you know, it's really early in the season, but the Celtics have kind of established themselves. Tough injury last night to Kemba last night, but it looks like signs are pointing towards he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
The Celtics are on the West Coast, I believe, right now, so they've kind of stumbled a little bit. But Celtics are in pretty good position. The Lakers, you know, right now they look really good. I think they're a two-loss team right now in the West. So a lot of stuff to talk about with Ian Levy as well. We'll get to that. But I do want to get to first the big talk of the week, which I think is the UVM men's basketball team. When we left this show last Saturday, we said when we come back here Saturday, we're going to know a lot more about this UVM team, and boy, what a showing the Catamounts had this past week.
Yeah, I just started hours after that show a week ago. They won sort of in dramatic, heroic, impressive and sort of like just alarming fashion against St. John's, but that was their game than a buzzer beater.
I agree. I mean, UVM had a huge lead late in that game, and you kind of felt like UVM was the better basketball team the whole game, but boy, college basketball is like that, right?
Right.
The three-point shot is a difference maker, so you can take a 10-point deficit with 3 minutes to play and all of a sudden be tied with a minute left to play, and that's what St. John's did to the Cats.
It was like they were, I think it was about 10 points with about 3 minutes to go,
right.
And you look at the clock and you're like, wow. And you're like, they just need a couple stops. And then you don't get those couple stops.
Right.
And then, you know, the sort of fluky last 25 seconds there where UVM gave it back. They hit a three and you're like, whoa, it's
here
tied now. And then Anthony Lamb steps up and really shines and sort of gives you a little foreshadowing to what we saw on Tuesday.
Those runs that college basketball teams go on are so fun and cool because if you're on the if you're on the positive end of a run like that, then it's all the hope and momentum. And if you're on the other side, you're looking at a 10-12 point lead and not feeling safe about it at all.
Yeah, that's
so the game gets exciting.
It really does. But I'll tell you what, if we learned anything in the St. John's game, it's that UVM can take a punch and come back. They can go on the road in a tough place to play and win a basketball game. They can do it against a big opponent, a Power 5 team like a Big East team like St. John's. But again, Anthony Lamb in that game to step step up. And I think the interesting interview with Becker at the end of the game was that's not exactly the play we set up for him. But, you know, he took the ball. He got himself in the position. He hit the shot he had to make. And that's what Anthony Lamb does, Austin. He makes big shots.
And the shots kept getting literally bigger, like longer, deeper, more impressive when they played
at Virginia.
At Virginia in Charlottesville on Tuesday. I mean, I think the line from the St. John's game might not have been like the most impressive. It was double-double, like oh-hum for Anthony Lamb. But yeah, there was a game that Vermont looked pretty good. They looked comfortable. They didn't look rattled. They got that big lead. Then you go into Charlottesville, home of your defending national champions.
Wahoo wah.
And we can get into where that came from later, maybe. But it doesn't look good in the first half against Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, the offense really scuffling after scoring that early flurry of points. And then he hits that late three.
At
the buzzer of the first half to go from a 9-point game to a 6-point game. And you're like, wow, okay, this feels a lot better. And then he absolutely went off in the second half to the point that they were leading number 7 Virginia at Virginia with, you know, late in the game. Not just like one of those games where it's like, oh, they were there and then they got overtaken. No, they were there and then the game sort of ran out of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end, we'll break down that a little bit, but I think the Virginia game is a perfect example of why this Vermont team is for real. And I thought as a Virginia fan, and everybody knows I am, you know, I thought it spoke well to Virginia as well, because Virginia had to play a really good basketball team, and when their backs were against the wall and they had a guy like Lamb that was going off, that was like all ACC type player Anthony Lamb in that game. I mean, they could not, he was hitting shots, and that's what you have to do against a defense like Virginia, but let's not take away what Lamb did against two of the best defenders in the country. Matami Diakite and Braxton Key from Virginia are two of the, and I know people don't know those names as well as kids from Duke and North Carolina and the bigger schools that people seem to follow all the time. Those are two of the best defensive players in the nation. Okay, you're not going to find two guys that are better in the nation than Braxton Key and Matami Diakite. Number 3, Tony Bennett is the best defensive coach in the nation. And what you saw at Anthony Lamb is exactly what Virginia saw last year against Purdue, against Carson Edwards, who went completely off on them in the Elite Eight game, but Virginia was able to come back and win the game. What Anthony Lamb did this week proves to me he is one of the best players in the nation. And a team like Virginia had a hard time finding an answer. Luckily for them, they had kids like Kihei Clark and Matami Diakite to hit big shots down the stretch that were well defended by Vermont, by the way. Okay, these are bombs that Kihei Clark had to hit to give Virginia the opportunity to win this basketball game. Those are two big-time programs. Vermont is here, folks, and they're in a great position to be a top 25 team by the end of the season.
Fun fact, defenses coached by Tony Bennett at home have only allowed 30 points to 4 players in his entire career.
So I got this list. Since Tony Bennett took over at Virginia, Anthony Lamb became the 11th guy to score 30 or more points against the Cavaliers. This list looks like just an NBA draft list. You go last year, Carson Edwards, RJ Barrett. Year before, Marvin Bagley, Georges Niang, a guy from Clemson, I don't remember, Jaron Blossom game. Kay Felder, Eric Green, Dwayne Jackson, Grievous Velasquez from Maryland from about 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And then Taylor Battle from Penn State that same year. So you think...
Long time ago.
Yeah. But like you look and there's like 6-7... solid NBA caliber names on there, right. And then you have add Anthony Lamb to that list.
Unbelievable. But this is what I think you take more out of this, is that Vermont didn't play great against St. John's, and they didn't play great against Virginia. Like, if it wasn't for Anthony Lamb, the rest of the guys aren't playing great. You know, and we all know, if you look at the back of the baseball card, so to speak, you know what the rest of these kids can do.
Right.
I mean, that's why last week we had Bernie Splicker to talk about this team. I said, when this team's clicking, what do we expect to see? I mean, if Lamb can do this on a daily basis, which there's no reason to believe that you can't. This is why before you came in this day, Aaron and I were talking about this, Austin. When you have senior-laden players and your best player's a senior, like Lamb, he's going to be doing this all year. If he stays healthy, he's going to do this all year.
Yeah.
If you start to get the Duncan kids playing, you start getting Steph Smith, and I thought Steph Smith played a great game against Virginia as well. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a really good job against Clark, did a really good job in terms of running that offense. But when you start getting some offensive help from those other guards to start hitting shots, this Vermont team is a really dangerous team, Austin.
Get Benny Shungu back healthy.
Benny Shungu as well.
That's the other thing. The way that Vermont turned it over down the stretch when they needed to get get some points because Virginia had taken the lead and they turned it over on three or four straight possessions. You look and you're like, and even earlier than that, trying to penetrate that Virginia defense, the pack line, it's like, man, you wish Shungu was on the court for that, because that's what he does. He has that great handle. He has the body that he can keep defenders at bay. And then at the other end, if you put him on Kihei Clark, I don't think Kihei Clark has anywhere near the game he does. And you look at that, they did that without their starting point guard, who does great things at both ends. That also, like we were saying last week, says a lot about Vermont when they're not playing what we call, quote unquote, their best, where it doesn't even look like they're feeling it, but it's like they're winning games and it doesn't look like everything's going their way.
And I would say they're not at their best. I mean, they're not at their best right now. I mean, let's face it. The Duncan brothers have not played, I think, up to the level that the expectation is for them. I think Giddens had a hard time staying on the floor, and I think he's a difference maker when he stays on the floor. So, I mean, you just talked about Shungu being out. I mean, this team is not peaking yet. And if you talk to Anthony Lamb, he still hasn't played his best basketball yet. So when you put all that together in a college basketball world that really is about, when you have experienced players that are playing and older teams, these are the teams that make some noise. I mean, listen, it is not even Thanksgiving yet, so let's not go. I mean, I can go crazy. Bernie used to yell at me because I used to freak out about how exciting this UVM team is. But there is no reason not to believe that if this team stays healthy throughout the rest of the season and continues to progress the way we expect them to progress, that this team cannot make some noise in March. Oh, and, I'm not, and I'm not talking about just getting there. I mean getting there and making a run. There's no reason to believe this team can't do that.
If they've played not their best basketball and still played this well this far into their non-conference schedule and that continues, then we should have big expectations in March, because by then they should be clicking.
Oh, God, yeah. You look, they beat a good A-10 team in St. Bonaventure, not playing great. They beat the number two predicted team in the Patriot League at Bucknell, not playing great. They beat an athletic Big East team at St. John's. Awesome. They beat Boston University. They beat Boston University, BU turns around and beats South Carolina.
Exactly.
At South Carolina.
Exactly.
Like, whoa.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this team is legitimately for real. And that takes us to the Green City Garage poll question today. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, Vermont. 802-651-9299. That's 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage. It's where I bring my car for every problem that I have. Every problem. Well, I need an oil change, tire rotation, a little balancing. If I need to figure out how to turn the heat on or heat off, that is a problem for me in my car. For whatever reason, I still can't figure that out. I bring it to my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage. Not only is it a great garage, it's an environmentally friendly garage, so everybody loves that. So check them out, Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. Make an appointment today for your car. The Green City Garage poll question today for Sports Saturday. You can go to 101.3 The Game at Twitter. The question is right now, if you go there, by the end of the season, UVM men's basketball will be in the top 25. Yes or no? Go to Twitter right now at 101.3 The Game and let us know. I say yes, because in my mind, I don't look at things as they're not going to happen. I say, this is what I see. This is what I know. I expect them to run this. I'm not saying they're going to be on the. I bet you this is a 2 or 3 loss team, maybe a 2 loss team going into the NCAA tournament. This team will be ranked. And I say, watch out, Bearcats, in a few weeks when you got to get to play this team. When Cincinnati has UVM come, if they're playing at the level that they are, and there's no reason to think that they're not, they're going to beat you at Cincinnati.
If what we're seeing plays out, I definitely think we're looking at like a 3 or 4 loss team, which would be better than any UVM team before them. And I think with all the buzz they got coming in, that great showing against the defending champs, just the other night. I think, as we were talking about before the show, you look at that loss. That's not a loss that may hurt them as much as it shows, wow, this team is legit. They just scored 55 points against Virginia, who held, like, I think it was Syracuse to 36.
34.
It was 34.
Yeah.
So Anthony Lamb lost to Syracuse by 4 against Virginia.
Okay, so let's go through UVM's schedule. They have Central. Who do they play today?
Central Connecticut State. Winless Central Connecticut.
Okay, so you expect them to win that one, and then they play the winner of Rider or Columbia tomorrow. See, I'm going to say they win these two games. You've got Yale coming up at Yale.
Yale's good.
Okay, and then they're at Cincinnati December 3rd. Okay, so let's, between Yale and Cincinnati, we give them one loss or two losses?
I think you go one loss. I think you got to like the Cats at home.
So we pick, Yale is, they're at Yale though.
Oh, they're at Yale. Oh, okay. Then.
Okay, so let's say,
But I still think they're good enough to beat Yale.
I do too. So let's say we're 1-1 after that. I could see them going to beat Cincinnati. Let's just say it's 1-1. Then they're home against Towson. I say that's a win. Home against UNC Greensboro. I mean,
wait, do you want me to do my sports pope voice?
I'd love it.
That's a win.
Okay, fine. You went home against UNC Greensboro, a win. Home against Lipscomb. Okay, we know what how talented they are. Win, in my opinion. And then home against GW, who's been down, but it's still a big-time program.
Yeah.
Okay?
And I think that Lipscomb game, they're not the same Lipscomb team they were last year when they really torched the Catamounts down in Nashville. Greensboro is going to be tough, too.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a three-game stretch that if they can win those three at home, which is a stretch unlike we've seen in a long time, if they go 3-0 in those three, then you're cooking.
You are. Then you're at Dartmouth. You win. Then you start your America East Conference, and I think you win all those games. So there you go. And then they're going to win. And if they win the tournament, that's a 2 or 3 loss team. You're going to be ranked. So yes, the UVM men's basketball team, when it's all said and done, will be in the top 25 at least sometime this season. Yeah, we all agree on that. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Unanimous.
Yeah. How about us having unanimous today? This is weird.
Let's pack it up. We're done.
Our friends from Superb Cupcakes gave us a bunch of cupcakes. We've been chewing on cupcakes this morning. See what happens? Now we're all happy.
If you want a reason to tune in on Twitch, too, we will be reviewing those cupcakes on
absolutely during their segment. That's absolutely right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time to talk some Patriots, some Red Sox, some Celtics. And I always like to talk a little Yankees with this reporter because she's a former New York writer. Our good friend from the Boston Globe, Tara Sullivan. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
In the 4+ years I've done this show, one of my favorite guests that we have on periodically is our friend from the Boston Globe, Tara Sullivan. She's my favorite because we can talk to Tara about everything. We can talk to her about football, baseball, basketball. We can talk about golf. We can talk about the Olympics, hockey. She does it all. And She's like an expert from New York because that's where she used to work. And now she's in Boston. It's like best of both worlds, Austin.
Yeah.
So who better to have on right now, the Saturday before Thanksgiving, than our good friend from the Boston Globe, as I mentioned earlier on the TikTok Jewelers guest line here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game, Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe. Good morning, Tara.
Good morning. How am I going to live up to an intro like that?
You always live up to it. That's it. Just be you as usual. That's all you got to do.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Are you all set for the holiday? Are you making the turkey this year?
No, but that's okay. We'll get there, right?
Hey, that's
one day at a time.
You got that right. That's perfect. All right, let's get into this because I know your time is limited today. Some news came out. I saw it this morning, but all of a sudden Tom Brady's questionable for the big game with the Cowboys tomorrow. What's going on there?
Well, this is Tom Brady, who appears on the injury list and then disappears. I get this one feels a little different. One, it's questionable, and two, it's, you know, going on late in the week rather than kind of we're more used to seeing maybe appear early in the week and be gone by the end. But I don't think, just from talking to my Globe colleagues last night, you know, there's no sense that he's playing in the game is in any actual jeopardy. I don't know. The cynics are wondering if it's just, you know, the advanced explanation for ongoing offensive troubles. I do think he'll be on the field Sunday, so I guess that's the bottom line.
Do you think they're really having offensive troubles? I mean I know that last week wasn't great against Philadelphia, but again, it's on the road against a really good defense, against a team in Philly that really needed that game. I mean, are people overreacting about the problems the Patriots are having offensively?
Yes and yes. I mean, the people overreact to the Patriots more than any other team in the New England market, despite how incredibly, you know, successful and good they've been over these two decades. It is definitely the rawest nerve of all I've discovered anyway, of all the fan bases. But that being said, I do think, you know, we're more accustomed to seeing the offense. Think about last year when they beat Kansas City at home and it was a shootout. Like, do you see them being able to compete in a shootout game as they're currently constructed? No. And are there reasons? Yes. They've had a ton of injuries, most notably along the offensive line, including their fullbacks, which is a position they value highly. So the running game hasn't been able to get going, you know, by any measure, and that affects everything, the revolving door at receiver. And, you know, I think there are legitimate questions about the offense. And I think we've seen that in Brady's, particularly in his post-game reactions, when even after a win, he's as dour as we've ever seen him.
Like, is anything looking up for the offense this week? Because I'm looking at what could be the injury report, and, like, if Sanu, I mean, I don't know what the status of his ankle is.
Yeah, I mean, I think they expect Sanu and Dorsett to be able to play. And they also are, we're anticipating the return of Isaiah Wynn at left tackle. I mean, Marshall Newhouse is the one who's been playing there for the last couple of weeks and literally came off the street. I mean, he did the best he could. I had seen him with the Giants, and he was done then. Not a bad guy, but just, you know, as your left tackle, that was an issue. So the return of Wynn, and I do think Sanu is a really, really tough player, and he rarely misses games, so I do think he'll fight through whatever. But, you know, it still doesn't, it doesn't mean they have that explosive threat on the outside, and I do think, you know, for a lot of it, that's what they're missing mostly. But to answer your question, yes, I think there is a little bit of hope as to some of those guys who might be available and or coming back this week.
I was glad to hear you mention the injury at the fullback position, because that watching how the season's gone since the first couple weeks, you sort of gain more appreciation for what Devlin does. And you almost look at his absence and you're like, well, that's at least like 30 to 40 yards a week you just don't have because you don't have him there. And that just, it limits so much of what they can do. Maybe after him or including him, what do you think has been the most detrimental injury they've had to deal with so far this year?
That's a great question, and I would agree with you to the extent my great colleague Nora Princiati, who covers the Patriots for us, pointed this out to me too. You know, Devlin was the lead blocker on every rushing touchdown in the Super Bowl last year. Like, this is a guy who was highly valued in the offense. The biggest absence, I would say, is not actually injury, it's Gronkowski. I mean, that's the guy they missed the most, because we saw he could turn himself into a lead blocker. We saw that in the playoffs against the Chargers, and obviously we know what he brought in the passing game. So to me, that has been the biggest, if I started somewhere, that would be number one. And then I would go to the offensive line, probably still before I go to the backs, because I do think a guy like Sony Michel, you know, if the holes are a little bit better, he will get something going. But when you take away tackles, guard, center, and then also your fullbacks, and even their second-string fullback went on IR, that's where you really run into problems, and it's just been grounded.
I think in today's NFL, offense is what we talk about. But I think the biggest surprise for me with this Patriot team, and I can't believe I'm saying it, is how dominant this defense has been.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, let's talk about that. We keep talking about all the problems that the Patriots have and all the issues that's going on around them. But this defense last week won them a football game and really made Philadelphia, I mean, they looked inept at times on the offensive end of the game.
I completely agree, and I think it starts in the defensive backfield, which I know that I haven't personally covered a collection of defensive backs, but I've seen some great ones through the years, and I've seen great ones lead, you know, the Ed Reeds or whoever, John Lynch, you know, leading a team from the back end. But starting with Gilmore as a cornerback who is the best man-to-man cover corner that I've watched in a long time, maybe going back to a Revis or something, you know, I think it starts there. They have such experience in that defensive secondary, and really they have a ton of experience. This is really essentially the same defense, minus Trey Flowers, that we saw what they did to the Rams in the Super Bowl. So I think they started way ahead of the starting line when the season opened. They played a lot of really bad teams early. They were able to dominate them, get a lot of confidence going. I think little things we've heard as this season's gone on, like that defensive backfield, they don't even separate into corners and safeties for meetings anymore. The whole secondary meets together because they can all do everything. And I think that's what, for me, that's where it starts. And I think what has made them so dominant.
That's wild right there. That, like, they're completely interchangeable parts.
All of them. And even if you move into like linebacker, like a Kyle Van Noy, right? On another team, he's probably not as great as he is with the Patriots, but the guy can do anything. He can stand in the dirt, or, you know what I mean? Like, he's one of those guys. And Jamie Collins on his return to the Patriots has been so good. And the guys along the defensive line have been good. So I think it's, listen, we all know defenses work hand in hand, right? Put pressure and your defensive backs are going to be better. You know, cover guys tightly and your defensive linemen are going to be better. But they just have a lot of talent. Maybe not a lot of stars, but they have a lot of talent that works really well together.
Did you come away from seeing how they played in that loss to the Ravens?
Baltimore, yeah.
And my takeaway was, they had an awful first quarter. And then they figured it out enough that, like, by the time you got into the third, the Patriots were back in it. And they, like, you just can't play a team as good at, like, doing what the Ravens were doing and then give one back in the with that pick six there in the third quarter. Any defense is going to have a hard time doing that. But after that loss, I saw people sort of nitpicking is this defense that good? And I came away from it thinking, yes, they were.
Oh, I agreed. I saw outside, I mean, the one first drive was abysmal from the defense's point of view. What they did, they could not get them off the field. But part of the problem was they couldn't even get them into third down. If I remember correctly, I don't think they even faced the third down on that drive, or if they did, it was third and two or something, maybe at the very end when they were in the red zone. So So you're not, you know, that's really hard, right? Like that was a bad, that was a bad defensive series for the Patriots. But I think I even wrote this. I wrote the defense, and that was part of it, that they made adjustments, and they did get themselves back in that game. Now, some of it were those, you know, the gifts that other teams seem to do against the Patriots, giving them the ball deep in their own territory, that kind of stuff. But, yes, I do think that the defense gets credit for the adjustments made. And, listen, wouldn't we all love a rematch to see what the game plans would be and what Belichick would have, you know, the next time now that he saw that speed up close and now that the defense saw that speed up close? And really, in full credit to Harbaugh, what he would have devised the next time around, because I think he's an underrated, really, really good coach.
And Tara, isn't there always one game a year that Bill Belichick just kind of throws it in, right? I mean, isn't there just one game against a really good team that he kind of says, you know what, I'm just going to be vanilla today. You know what I mean?
I often wonder that. I don't know. I think that's a great question. He'd never admit it, but yes, maybe in the notion that we might see them again, maybe you're right. It bit him with the Giants in the perfect season. You know, he played them tight in the regular season, beat them, and then sort of gave them the blueprint, you know, to lose them in the Super Bowl. Maybe, but I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine Belichick giving away any victory to any degree, but I think your point is valid that, you know, he's chewing up and digesting what happened in that Sunday night game, and it's filed away for if and when they meet them again.
We are talking to the great Tara Sullivan here of the Boston Globe. Tara, before I let you go, I got to get a baseball question in. There's a lot, I mean, I follow a lot of these Boston writers on Twitter, and there was talk about with Gerrit Cole going somewhere else. Would Houston want Chris Sale? We've heard rumors of Mookie Betts being moved. We've heard rumors that the Red Sox want to be under the luxury tax. We saw they let Dave Dombrowski go. I cannot believe that an organization that brought in Dave Dombrowski with all of the background he had of getting rid of the farm system to win now, wins a championship, struggles the next year, and is now going to blow this up. Is this Boston team? I mean, what are we looking at with the Red Sox next year, you think?
Yeah, that is a million-dollar question around Boston. And I think it's very difficult to answer because you now have Chaim Bloom, you know, running the show kind of. And is that more analytics-based? Is it going to get a little bit more business-like as opposed to baseball-like? I think a lot of it hinges around Mookie, if they can make any headway with him and feeling as if, because it's not just what they want of Mookie, it's what Mookie wants of them. So is there any open area there that they do want to stay together? Or if they know he's not going to be around long-term, then what else do they do? I don't have the answer because the contracts they gave last offseason have really, really hampered this team, the pitching, right? There's just so much money tied up in those pitchers. Hard for me to imagine. It's not the kind of market fan base, you know, that does well with blowing up and starting over, especially when you're a year out from a World Series. So I'm as fascinated as you are to kind of see what steps are taken.
Last week, your colleague wrote an article that there's potential there. He created a scenario where the Red Sox would trade Mookie Betts to the Yankees. Can you imagine that happening?
I can't. No, I can't. Can you? I don't know. I guess the Patriots had a trade with the Jets this year, right? So maybe it's possible. Yeah. That would be a blockbuster. But Pete knows his stuff. So if he's throwing it out there, we'll certainly monitor it.
Mookie Betts leading off for the Yankees in center field. Can you believe what would happen in Boston when that?
It has to work out better than Ellsbury did, right?
Oh, my goodness. Great. Anything works better out than what Ellsbury did anyway. All right, Tara, listen, have a great holiday. Thanks so much
Thanks
for the time. And we'll reach out again down the road.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Tara Sullivan of the Boston Globe. One of my favorite. I mean, she just has so much insight. But I think if you're a Patriot fan, and we'll get into this. I mean, you Patriot fans are insane anyway, and I want to talk about it later in the show. I have friends that are texting me during these Patriot games and you're whining and upset about everything. Just take a deep breath. My God, what makes you think Dallas is going into Foxborough and winning? What would make anyone think that the Dallas Cowboys can go into Foxborough and win a football game?
Right now, the injuries only.
I don't care about the injuries. If Tom Brady plays, they're going to win. The Dallas Cowboys can... I don't know what Dallas is. One of those things that's like they really look good on paper, but you get to know them and you're like, yeah, you're pretty average. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no way Dallas goes in and wins. So I mean, the Patriots are going to be fine. They're going to the Super Bowl against Minnesota. I told you just 2 weeks ago.
The only thing that concerns me is if they have another sluggish start on offense and they can't really get going, and all of a sudden, you know, the Cowboys come out. They're working play action stuff with Zeke and Dak, and you're like, okay, we're going to stare an 8-minute drive in the face. We're not going to score. They're going to do it again. We're going to be down 2 touchdowns, and we've held the ball for like 3 minutes. Like that's the nightmare scenario when you're playing a team that can run the ball like they can from time to time.
It's not going to happen. I mean, you have the best. The Patriots have the best defense in the league. Dallas is not going to be able to figure that out. You're going to confuse Dak Prescott. I mean, Dak Prescott is, I mean, he's a good quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. And I just, it's just, you got to take a deep breath with the Pats. I think it's going to be okay. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking some NBA with our good friend. Oh, I'm sorry. What do we got, Aaron?
Real quick, we got Jan.
Oh, Jan. Okay.
Jan wants to weigh in.
What's happening, Jan?
Hey, good morning. I just, like you're just saying about the Cowboys. You got the Jets beat the Cowboys. The lousy, worst franchise in football beat the Cowboys. So all Cowboys fans, all Patriots fans, you've got your rings. Just enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that a boy. Yeah, thanks for going. Let me just, before we go, Jason Wilson said, Dallas is the better team. You're a homer. It's disgusting. I'm not a homer. I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm a Giants fan. I'm just telling you as it is. You Dallas fans don't like it. It's not a great football team. You got great talent.
Living in 1995.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a great football team. It's okay. I'm a Giants fan. You can pick on me about that. I'm not a homer. I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm sick of the Patriots. But I know greatness when I see it, and that's a great football team. And until someone goes in and beats them in a big game, it's not going to happen. I'm just telling you. Take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking NBA with our good friend from NBA Insight, Fansided.com, NBA editor Ian Levy. Don't go anywhere.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Remember, you can watch us live on television on twitch.tv/1013TheGame. Got some text messages here coming in. You start talking about the Cowboys and the Patriots, you know, people like to start talking. Jim from Essex just wrote, gee, a Giant fan, talking about me here. Sure, you're definitely objective when it comes to the Cowboys. Shake my head. Just listen, I am a Giant fan, but I feel like I'm pretty objective when it comes to every team. I will just be honest. You tell me one thing that makes you feel this Dallas team is ready to win a championship or ready to be known as an elite team that can go into Foxborough and win. Tell me one thing.
I didn't even realize it, but I looked at the Cowboys schedule. There are 6 wins. The best team on there is the Eagles. The Eagles are 5-5.
Yeah.
The other wins, you got 2 against the Giants, 1 against the Redskins, 1 against the Dolphins, and then 1 against the Lions.
Yeah. I mean, an Lions team that didn't have their starting quarterback, an Lions team that had, I think they had a chance to win late in the game. I mean, look, Dallas has good talent. Don't get me wrong. And they've got, you know, they
lost to the Jets.
And they lost to the Jets. So I'm just saying, like, what makes you think, like, what Dallas fan, look, I get you're a fan of a team and you want it. I get all that. But what makes you think that this Dallas team is just, you know, how can you say anything negative about the Dallas Cowboys? Like, what have you done? What have you done since Troy Aikman? What have you done since Jimmy Johnson? Like, what have you done? Like, just give me an example of what makes this Dallas Cowboy team a team that I should take seriously. They haven't done anything. Now, if you go into Foxborough and win, good. Good for you if you do that. You deserve some props if you do that. But the Cowboys have done nothing this year that makes me think, oh boy, they're going to go in and win. Now, you can tell me the reasoning. Is it the coaching? I know that Garrett gets a lot of smack for that. Is that the problem? Is Jones too involved? Is Dak not good enough? You know, are they not doing X? What is it? But you're going to sit here and tell me that I should believe that the Cowboys are going to roll in there and win? Come on, give me a break.
Doug in Milton says, you're not a homer, you're a hater. But with that being said, he does think the Cowboys are going to lose this weekend. Not because of the talent on New England, but because of the lack of talent on the coaching staff in Dallas.
Well, maybe that will be the reason. But again, I'm not a hater about it. If Dallas is a great team, I'll say it as, I'll tell you as it is.
I think you could say the dead weight that the Cowboys have been carrying for a while has been, you know, underneath headsets.
And I think the thing about the Cowboys is, but all the experts want the Cowboys to be great, right? I mean, everybody wants the Cowboys to be fantastic.
America's team.
Yeah, America's team.
They pull ratings.
And then when you look at the Patriots situation, like, look, I understand they're not playing great football, I guess, if you're a Patriot fan, they're not playing at the level you want them to play. But until they lose, until someone actually goes in there and does something in a big game, and I think this is a big game for the Patriots, I would say chalk this up as a big game for the Patriots, then even if they lose this game, I'm not going to sit here and say the Patriots aren't the team to beat in the AFC. Right. I don't care if every team goes through slumps. I mean, last week I think is a perfect example of why the Patriots are better than anybody else thinks they are, because you won a football game where offensively you didn't play well against a good defense.
They had a stinker on offense.
They did, but boy, that defense was, I don't know if I've seen an NFL defense dominate anybody like that in years. And Philadelphia's a good football team.
Just absolutely bottle them up. Bottle them up, threw them in the sea.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Maybe Jason, Texas again, from Jason from Williston. You'll see this Sunday, like when Baltimore steamrolled them.
Well, I mean, he started before that, too.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He had three texts. He does the whole like multiple text thing, which is fun.
Oh, I see. Okay, go ahead.
Better O-line, better running back, better weapons, better linebackers.
You're talking about Dallas. Okay.
Yep. And then the Pats team is a mirage, end of story. The Pats team has the greatest coach of all time, end of story.
Well, I mean, look, you're obviously, he must be a Cowboy fan. And fair enough, like, I love your fandom and good for you. But I mean, and again, but you're clouded by your fandom. You're talking about a homer. I mean, you're in the homer with the Cowboys. I mean, look, the Patriots are the team, whether you like it or not. And I can't stand them either. It's it's frustrating to watch them win year after year. My God, enough is enough.
Though?
It is. It is. Let me tell you something. It really is. Well, looking at Foxborough every January, like a big game in Foxborough, it's like enough is enough. But at the end of the day, you got to look at this and understand the Patriots are the Patriots, and they deserve the respect that I feel they need. And I think that when you look at the Cowboys, until the Cowboys win a big game, and I would say this is the biggest game for the Cowboys in what, the whole season? I mean, until they do that and beat a really good football team, I'm just going to tell you that I'm not sure about them.
Yeah, it's definitely Dallas's biggest game since the Saints game, where they actually held them in check. There was like, I think, a weird 12-10 game.
Yeah.
Field goal festival.
Yeah.
And that would, they were going 3-0 into that one, but against the likes of the Giants, the Redskins, and the Dolphins,
yeah,
who have all proven to be a shell of a football team, basically.
I think when you look at the NFL today, I think in the NFC you have some teams. I think, like, New Orleans is a really good football. I think
Minnesota.
I think Minnesota, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, when they're healthy, is the best football team in the NFC. I really do. I know that San Francisco gets a lot of plug. I know Dallas, obviously, gets some love, obviously. Philadelphia, people seem to like. San Francisco, New Orleans, we had mentioned. But to me, I think in Seattle, I think you got to look at Seattle. Ooh. And think they're a legit team as well. But when I think when it's all said and done, you look at the talent bases, I think Minnesota is the best. When you go to the AFC, Kansas City is not, there's too inconsistent for me on both ends of the field. I just feel like the Patriots are still the Patriots. And when you look at what they can do defensively, they're going to figure it out offensively. And when Sanu and Brady get on the same page together.
They had flashes a couple weeks ago.
They did.
Sanu had 10 catches in that second game he played. It was like, ooh, this is fun.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend. But I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, to think Dallas can go into Foxborough, I've seen nothing this year that tells me that as elite as you think Dak Prescott is as elite as you think those linebackers are, and as talented as you think that running back is, that they can go in to beat a New England team that's going to be prepared for them like they're going to be with Bill Belichick against the defense that the Patriots boast this season. I got to see it before I'm going to say it.
We're getting called like homers and you know, saying we're basically like loving up the Pats.
Sure.
I will say this. I think the Pats are fallible in places and at times year, like more so than they've been in the past somewhat. Especially since their schedule has been weak. The NFC's stacked. I buy into the Ravens.
The Ravens are a good team.
The Chiefs need to prove that they can keep Patrick Mahomes healthy or game plan without him in order for me. I mean, they didn't play poorly without him, but they won't beat playoff teams like that. And that's pretty much it. As far as Dallas goes, as they're not one of the teams that makes the NFC stacked. I do not believe in them. I think they are overrated. I think they could be really good. But I have to see more. I don't buy into Dak Prescott. That's my biggest thing. I know people probably kill me for that, but I've watched him play plenty, and I don't think he's the reason that team's ranked to the number one offense right now.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join this conversation today, or you can text us, as many people are here. I can't even keep up with it now.
802-655-6672
on the Town Fair Tire text line. Listen, Cowboys, you know, look, we kind of said our piece about the Cowboys and the Patriots. I think like there is some concern, obviously, with the Patriot offense, Austin. I think it's something that's legitimate, and I think it's something that I think you need to look at. But at the end of the day, I think Bill Belichick will figure this out. And I think what you're going to see is games like this with the Cowboys, games where everyone thinks that they can't win, this is the game that they end up winning, and they win by a lot.
That's the thing. Like I wouldn't be shocked to see it be close. I wouldn't be shocked to see loss. I wouldn't be shocked to see like a nice little 17 or 20 point win. Like that would be,
I bet that would be
a fun return to form. It is just so stark of a contrast to go from watching a Patriots team that for the last 10 plus years does it with like, they get on the front foot with offense and they play just enough defense until last year to make it all work out. Then last year, at the end of the year, they transform into a running team that can stop people, and then they stop basically the hottest team in football. in the NFC anyway, in the Rams, and like absolutely shut them down.
And, what,
like,
and look what the Patriots have done to the Rams.
But the contrast,
like, overall,
contrast that history with this year, where all of a sudden it's like, okay, the offense might not look great, but the defense isn't going to give up any cheapies if they give up anything. And so it's more of a, okay, we just have to stay the course, be patient, which we haven't had to be. It's weird and unsettling, but like also oddly satisfying at the same time. It's like, wow, we're really stopping them for 2.5 quarters.
Well, and again, I think when you look at the Patriots, this is, they are maybe what they are. They're a defensive first team with an elite quarterback who's aging. And they're still trying to figure out who they are. I mean, look, Sanu is still brand new to this organization, to this system. Edelman hasn't been able to be healthy. They haven't been healthy at the running back position. We just talked to Tara Sullivan from the Globe, and she informed us about the offensive line problems they've had. I mean, they haven't been healthy on the offensive line all year.
That was the thing after like the first couple games when you had Antonio Brown come in. They looked like $1 million the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season. But Isaiah Wynn got hurt, and he'd been looking like a world beater, like exactly the player they drafted in the first round. And then he goes down, and you're like, wow, we're playing piecemeal offensive line. They lose the center, David Andrews.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's the point. So you look at this organization, you look at this team, and you think, wow, all these injuries, and they're still where they're at. They go on the road and beat a – and again, sometimes you think, okay, this team's good, and there's a team that really needs to win. Philadelphia needed to win that game last week. They weren't able to do it because the New England defense was so good. And now Dallas comes to New England, a Dallas team, like I just mentioned, that, you know, to me hasn't proven enough to think that they can go in and beat a Bill Belichick football team. I just haven't seen it. You know?
Have we talked enough about that goofy sleeve that Carson Wentz was wearing?
I didn't even notice that last week.
So he had this like camo sleeve on his throwing arm that every time you're like, is he tatted up? Like, is that like a tat sleeve? Like, what's, and it was like, but it was camo.
My dad had to ask me if that was a real tattoo or if that was an arm sleeve. And I was like,
you got to have some style.
I think
out
it's
there.
A sleeve.
I don't think it was style.
You
got to
have
though.
Some style.
Man, I know he likes hunting, and I know it's like salute to service month or whatever it is, but it wasn't a good look.
I don't remember that. I didn't see that one.
Missing
oh,
out.
Oh, we just got, oh, I see. So we just got called up. This is a Bush League show. That's pretty good stuff. Little Bush League show.
Huh.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, when you talk smack about the Cowboys, Cowboy fans are passionate. They are passionate, as are Patriot fans. It'll be an interesting game this week. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. But like we just said, I think the Patriots are going to win the game. I think they're going to win the game. I don't want to say handily, because I think with the injuries, I mean, the Patriots right now aren't putting a whole lot of numbers up on the board. But it'll be interesting to see what Dallas does against this New England defense, because to me, this New England defense is the best in the league. I mean, and when they... And if you're not at your best, and you haven't proven that you can be at your best, it's going to be interesting. I mean, if they can take Zeke Elliott out of play, and obviously we know what they can do in the secondary. I mean, this is could be a long day for Dallas.
Yeah, I think you just probably wrote Belichick, or at least Xeroxed Belichick's game plan, where it's like you what Belichick does is he shuts down your best weapon. So that's going to be Zeke. You shut down Zeke and make Zach beat the best secondary in football. Okay, let's see how that goes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's out in left field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, my man, what do we got this week?
Oh, boy. You ever heard of Tacos Saving Lives?
I think that's the story. That might be the...
Every Tuesday.
The subtitle of my autobiography.
Tacos. Are there anything they can't do? That marvel of Mexican food has at least one true believer. In Tucson, Arizona, resident Ryan Bishop credits a taco as the reason he narrowly avoided being struck by a bullet. Bishop was approaching the Pima County Fairgrounds entrance in his car early Sunday afternoon when suddenly the window of the driver's side shattered, according to the Tucson station KOLD-TV. I heard a very loud explosion happening in my window, Bishop told the station. He said that at first he thought a rock had broke it, and he decided to pull over and inspect. That was a bad idea. He says he opened the car, took a look around, and then heard pop, 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 pop. So he got back in the car and continued driving. He pulled over eventually and called the police. They discovered a bullet sitting on his dashboard, and that's when Bishop focused on the taco he had been eating when the shots rang out. He told KOLD he normally drives with his car window down with his arm out the window, the same spot where the bullet had hit the car.
Ooh.
He had the window up and had his arm inside because he was worried about taco filling flying around in the wind. So
It happens.
This is not the first time taco-related things have saved someone's life. Taco Bell sauce has also been known to come in handy. In March, an Oregon man and his dog survived 5 days stuck in the snow by living off Taco Bell sauce. Also, in March, a Florida man's need for more hot sauce saved his life when a car careened into a Taco Bell outlet right where he'd been sitting before he got up to get the sauce.
There's a lot of taco stories there.
Tacos save lives.
I do love a good taco. Are you a hard shell taco or a soft shell taco?
Hard shell tacos are for children. Soft shell tacos are the only proper.
So you don't, there's not days where you're like, you know what, a nice hard shell taco.
No, they're really, they're the structural integrity is just below substandard. You as soon as you take a bite, it just starts disintegrating in your hands.
But hold on a minute. Now, look, I agree with you when you get like one that's like, if you get a fresh hard taco shell, but you put some taco meat in there and let it sit for a little while where it kind of like absorbs some of the stuff.
Who's waiting long enough to look at a taco to let it like...
No, you put three tacos on your plate. The first one might be a little rough, still, but the second two and three are perfect.
The two and three aren't going to be on the plate long enough for
that's
that,
what I mean.
Like, that sweet alchemy you're talking about.
See, for me, tacos, it's a mood thing for me. Like either I'm a hard, I feel like maybe a hard shell taco or the soft shell taco. I mean,
soft only.
Really?
And it's a great gluten-free option for folks.
Oh, there we go again. It's what you need. It's very
They're for
good point.
Everybody.
They are. All-inclusive.
I got to go soft tacos because I agree that the hard tacos falling apart is a problem. Also, when they fall apart, it's like knives have appeared in your mouth.
You guys are
weak. Yes, exactly.
What do you mean? What do you mean they fall apart? How do you eat a taco? You like attack it like, can't you hold
no, you
it like a little
soft? Just eat it from
soft?
The side.
Just eat it, hold it, you know, a little soft and just take a bite, keep it over the plate.
No.
Then you have a little shrapnel that falls and you get a little extra when it's over.
No, like shards of hard, tortilla, no way.
I've gotten some good burns with soft tacos. You pick the taco, you think it's got some structural integrity, and you take a good bite, and it falls out the backside.
So that's the thing with soft tacos, is they have to be somewhat moist and warm to
manipulate a little bit.
Yes, to like hold in everything that like they actually add structural integrity when they're a little warm and moist.
You are a very good spokesperson for the soft taco.
I went to Mexico a month ago
chicken or beef.
I'd probably
or pork
carne asada.
I go pork.
Yeah, really.
Oh, whether you're talking
avocado.
Oh, please.
Yes. Right. Sour cream.
No.
No. What?
I don't need yes. the dairy on there. Like I don't
no.
need like
no dairy.
No. Okay. I make
tomato?
A kill. I make it. Nah.
Yeah. Okay. Not
I make a killer carnitas taco. All you got to do, add some diced onion and some cilantro, avocado if you got it, a little hot sauce, a little salsa verde. That's
done.
All you need.
That's it.
That's all you need.
Now, is Taco Tuesday, is that a big deal for you? Do you Taco Tuesday or is it Taco Thursday?
Taco any day.
Taco whatever day.
Yeah.
Is it a lunchtime meal for you once in a while when you're writing a quick article?
If I got it, it doesn't matter.
So just tacos is your thing.
Oh,
I love some tacos.
Dude, I went to Mexico last month pretty much just to enjoy as many tacos as I could in a short period of time.
I don't know if I know anyone that loves tacos like Austin Danforth likes tacos. How many tacos did you have in Mexico? What'd you say?
I think after day two, I was at like somewhere between 15 and 18, and we didn't have any on one night. So
after day two, you had 18 tacos.
We went to we had lamb tacos for breakfast one day.
Ooh,
Barbacoa tacos. This place, it's on Taco
Barbacoa.
Chronicle. It's on Taco Chronicles. I think it's like episode 4. This place, El Hidalguense. Oh my god, it was the best lamb I've ever had, and also the best taco I've ever.
You're speaking my language with these meat choices.
Let me tell you something. I didn't get this education with Ty. I didn't expect this education with about tacos.
Taco Chronicles. Look it up.
We'll be
Episode 1, Al Pastor.
All right, kiddo. Sports update time.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Is a number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Chris from joining us right now on the with our text line here, the Town Fair Tire text line. He said, the right answer is you take the soft shell taco, spread sour cream around it like saucing a pizza crust, then put hard shell in the middle so you wrap the soft shell around the hard shell. The sour cream holds it together. Then you do the rest up with all the fixings as normal. Hey, Chris.
A vision.
My language, buddy.
I applaud the innovation.
Yeah.
That's not a sustainable tactic if you want to have lots of tacos lots of the time. That just seems like it turns what could be a very simple food into a higher calorie.
Why can't people just have tacos the way they want to have their tacos, Austin? I mean, people like to have their tacos with the hard shell and the soft shell.
I feel like I could deflect and we could call up Alex Abrami for his take on adults that use ketchup on hot dogs.
You know, he doesn't like that either.
Whoa. Really? Hey now.
This will be a show better for his mother. We'll talk about the food piece. I mean, you guys are you food snobs over there at the Free Press.
I mean, to each his own, but I like everybody's entitled to their own wrong opinion. And Chris's soft tacos are superior for a number of reasons. You can trick them up like at putting the soft taco around the hard taco. That's I applaud the innovation.
Sure. Well, but I guess the point being is, then we'll end the taco talk here. But I mean, if you do kind of like the hard shell, but don't like the fact it breaks, Chris from Virgin's a brilliant idea.
Brilliant. I could also introduce you to a thing called nachos if you like hard tacos.
Yeah, but don't put the hard taco with the soft taco. That's what I'm saying. If you get best of both worlds.
Or a tostada.
Okay, fair enough. Enough of this. I'm done talking Mexican food with
tostadas
you.
Tostadas are delightful.
You're annoying. 655-6672 to join us today. Hey, well, let's talk a little bit right now in the Green City Garage poll question. What the poll question today was, by the end of the season, UVM men's basketball will be in the top 25. Where are we at right now?
Hold on. It took Twitter like a full 10 seconds to
load. Oh, no.
Okay. Tell me where we're at.
Okay. Scrolling.
All right, here we go.
67% say no.
Yeah, here's what I don't understand about the fan base up here. And feel free to tell me where I'm wrong here. So earlier this week, I'm kind of new to Twitter. I've been on Twitter for a little while, but I'm like the last 6 months I've kind of tweeted more and I'm reading
more. You're still
in
the shallow end.
There's a lot of things I don't know how to do on it, but whatever. So long story short is, a friend of mine that I follow on Twitter was in a kind of a debate with a person that he follows on Twitter about the top, like where Anthony Lamb falls in terms of great players in the nation. And I think and I don't remember where the question, one was like top 25, top 50, top 125. And people that pick top 25 in terms of where Anthony Lamb is today as a player in the NCAA basketball world, he was kind of mocking, making fun of it almost. Like, and I don't get where. So we have a fan base that can't recognize that a senior Anthony Lamb, first of all, number one, college basketball stars are all underclassmen in most parts, right?
Yeah.
When we talk about the players that are coming out, they're after their freshman year, their sophomore year, we're talking about a senior-laden player that has played unbelievable talent so far this season. I think right now Anthony Lamb could be a top 10 player in NCAA basketball, number one. Number two, I would argue, how can your fan base here look at this team today and say if things don't fall the way we expect them to fall for them, and there's no reason not to think that they can't, that they couldn't be a top 25 team?
Well, not only was Twitter slow, it failed to refresh. When I manually refreshed it, it's actually 52% no. So.
Oh, good. So it's getting closer.
We're getting closer.
Right, but back still, to the future.
But the point is, it's still 52% that think this team will not be in the top 25. And I guess my question is, what don't you believe about UVM? I'm not saying they're going to win a national championship. I'm not saying they're going to go to the Final Four. I'm not saying they're even going to win. They may not win a game in the tournament. But what makes you think that this team can't compete when you look at what they have on paper? When you look at what they have on paper and you look at look at this coach, who I think is one of the unsung best coaches in the country.
Oh, we'll be lucky to keep him.
No question about that. But I'll say this, there's no reason to think he won't stay. He just keeps building better players, he just keeps bringing in better players, better teams. He's about to get a brand new facility. There's a lot of reason to think John Becker will stay here. But to think that this UVM basketball team that's led by a senior, the best player on the team is a senior who's an elite player, that can't make a run at this thing, and why the fan base just can't, even if you're not a UVM fan, a big fan, not look at this team and think, wow, this might be the greatest team that Vermont's ever had. And why is it crazy to think that they could be in the top 25? Why is that crazy to think? Show me the list of 50 players that right now are better than Anthony Lamb. Show me 10 players that are better than Anthony Lamb right now.
I think the 10-player argument is a bit of a stretch for you, but I'll rewind.
Okay.
I definitely don't think there are 50 players better than Anthony Lamb in America right now. I don't think anybody could really pick out 50 that are actually better. But to go back even further to what you're saying about how fans might not be able to get behind it, and in the fact that they don't think UVM will crack the top 25, you can see that, one, it's hard, but why it's hard is what I was talking about earlier, the way in which we've been programmed as Vermont fans to just know that everybody is just going to think less of us because we are, a low mid-major in a great mid-major in a low mid-major league. So you're just never going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Let me just stop you. I would say that on a normal year, like say maybe three years ago when Trey Bell Haynes.
We've never seen an abnormal year.
But what I'm saying is this year's team though gets a lot of pub. I mean, there's a lot of national guys that are talking about this basketball team. And when that happens and you start to get that exposure, that to me is when you start to get the opportunity. And I guess that's my point. And when you look at the schedule that they're playing, and they're playing a great schedule. Mm-hmm. And I look at what they've done so far. And we went down the list in the first segment, who they've beaten and where they stand in these conferences. And I don't think there are any moral victories in basketball. I really don't. I don't think you look at the Vermont-Virginia games, that's a moral victory.
That was what John Becker said after the game. Like, you know, losing isn't acceptable. Right. So, like, they're sort of past moral
exactly
victories.
But when you look at what they did in Charlottesville to push Virginia the way they did and the way he did it, nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. We don't have crystal balls, but my point is, I guess I'm always half full when I think about future things that are happening with teams. When you look at this basketball team, how it's constructed, who's on it, and what it's led by, I think, how do you not put this team, I don't care who the writer, I don't care what the reputation is, with the exposure they're getting, with the national exposure that they're getting, and with the talent in place, if everything goes the way we expect it to go. Now, maybe it won't. Maybe they'll lose a game or two here along the way. Maybe they'll get blown out by Cincinnati. Maybe they'll lose a game in the American East. Then it's off the board. But with what we've seen so far in the first four, five, six games they've played, why is it crazy to think, or why wouldn't you believe that, you know what? This team might be a top 25 team in the nation.
Yeah, it's the fact that everybody knows around here that Division I college sports are prejudiced against the big names and the big leagues.
Yeah,
just functionally and structurally so. There's a reason that the NCAA selection committee is stacked with guys with affiliations to Power Five conferences, and that they're always going to give the benefit of the doubt to the bigger program that can draw better, that, you know, has maybe more of a pedigree in a lot of circumstances. Last week we were hammering on college football for the same thing, that, you know, it's set up to allow the big guys to succeed and to continue to succeed. And until that changes, or until someone like in college basketball, like a Vermont, can break through and really earn that respect for a program of that caliber, for a league of, you know, America East caliber, it's not going to happen. You can look and see.
Didn't Gonzaga do it? Isn't Gonzaga a good example?
Gonzaga did it to a point that they're no longer a mid-major.
Like, right. When Gonzaga got, say, in 2002, 2001, when Gonzaga came on the scene?
Right, but they're also coming from a league that's better than America East by a long
would
shot.
Would you argue that the conference that they're coming from, is better than America East, but I wouldn't say leaps and bounds better than the America East.
It's enough.
Now it is because of Gonzaga, but when Gonzaga was just coming into the fray here, that was a mid-major conference. That wasn't a power conference. Gonzaga's made that conference a power conference.
They've made themselves a power team in a mid-major conference. But the gulf between the WCC and WAC and America East is way, way bigger. And I'll go back to a different sport, even that, I mean, college soccer. The margins are so much finer, as you know, in soccer than any other sport. Like, one bounce, one goal in a game you dominate can ruin your season. And what UVM and America East has done, America East has had some damn good soccer teams. They had one team get to the Final Four in 2014. UMBC did it. And since then, they've gotten multiple bids, but this year wasn't one of them, even though the league champ was UNH, who was in the top 20 all season. They lost like once or twice. Vermont, co-champs with UNH. They were 11-5-1 going into the postseason. They get upset. They have no chance because there's still just no recognition and respect given to that league for what they do in most sports. It's just how it goes.
So fans have to be trained. So I guess the mentality isn't about what they believe UVM will be in terms of their talent
level.
It's skepticism at the people that can put them in a position yeah, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I get, okay, well, that's fair if that's what it is. So if that's what it is, fair enough. If what Austin is saying, if that's what it is, then I'm fine with that. But if you're a fan out there right now and can't look at the greatness of this organization, of this team and of this program, I mean, I don't know, man. Even elite programs don't have this type of build right now that I think UVM does. I think there's a handful of big time programs that would take this team and run with it in some of the bigger conferences in the country.
It's kind of like your issue with the baseball writers.
Oh yeah, man, I got a lot of gripe.
Got to trust the voters to trust the voting system.
I get, and if that's the argument, then I'm with you. Then I would stand with you on that. But I guess I never looked at it that way. My thought process was that people aren't believing. Like, how do you not believe in?
Even college hockey, like, I know now it's all about, literally all about the pairwise. So like what their version of the RPI. But when you look back, I don't think it was strictly pairwise a dozen years ago. But in those couple seasons leading up to when UVM finally got in the tournament in 09 and made the Frozen Four, they were like the fifth best team in Hockey East, which is saying something. But because of how they did against certain teams at certain points of the year, even the fifth best team from Hockey East, which is lauded as the best conference in college hockey, the fifth best team couldn't crack the tournament field because it's like, well, Michigan had a similar record and they were slightly better against some better teams. So like, why would we ever give the benefit of the doubt to a Vermont team that's on the up and up and has had some good performances when we could just give it to, you know, Michigan or Minnesota or, you know, pick your college hockey powerhouse.
Josh from Burlington on the Town Fair Tire text line says, it's not that I don't believe in UVM's potential to crack the top 25. It's that I don't trust the voters to give them their due and include them in the top 25 if and when they deserve to be. So Josh, thanks for the text. And that's, Josh gives us exactly the thing you were saying. It's not that he doesn't believe it. It's just he doesn't think the guys are going to do it. But I will say, with the exposure they're getting right now from all the national writers, I mean, so it's not as if this is like, they're, you know, say if like say 20 years ago when Coppenrath and TJ were getting it done and people were like, oh, why aren't we talking about
it? And that team didn't even get there.
But don't you think that this is a better team? I think this is a better team.
It's a deeper team.
It's a more talented team. And I love what UVM did. But that was a beautiful Cinderella story to me. This is legit, man. This team right now, when you look at it's just athletically and I mean, you know, it's funny. Bernie and I were texting during the UVM-UVA game and we're talking about the athletes. It's like, to me, UVM's athletes were matching up with some of the bigger, I mean, Virginia's one of the bigger programs in the country. I mean, this is athletically, they're right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're right there at point guard. They're right there in the post. They're right there at the 2 and 3. And when you're giving Shungu back, I mean, you got a really good team here that I think if you put this team in any conference, I think they would be competitive in every conference in the country. I really do.
I agree with you. It's so frustrating as a you know, someone who watches a mid-major program closely and knows how good they are and can see it against a team like Virginia, to know that at the end of the season, because your conference gets no respect, because you probably have six bad teams in your conference, that, you know, when they've restructured the selection committee such that it's stacked with Power Five representatives and they've changed the formula so that it's all about quadrant one wins and you need those quadrant one games that mid-major teams just can't get.
How good a thing would it be for Vermont if the Bracket Buster game would come back? Remember the Bracket Buster game a few years ago where they made in the middle of the season, they brought a team in from a better conference to play a lower mid-major conference team. They should bring that back.
And that was a lot of fun. I don't know, but UVM's success in that was sort of meh. Like it wasn't.
No, I agree. But this year's team could use it.
But at that point, actually, thinking about the Bracket Buster, one of the first years they did it was that 2004-05 season. Vermont played, I think it was Nevada, out at Nevada. And it was a good game against, I think Nevada was top 25 at the time. Whoever won that game was going to get an at-large bid. That's just how it was trending at that point in the season. Like, and Vermont didn't get it, so they knew they had to win the league.
Yeah.
But it would be cool if you could throw, you know, them against like a St. Mary's or somebody like that in California. That would be cool.
And I get the point because, you know, once the America East Conference gets going, you kind of forget. Right. I mean, then these power writers aren't going to remember the games when they're playing UNH and they're playing Maine. They're not going to be talking about it like they are when they're playing Lipscomb and George Washington, St. John's, Virginia, Cincinnati. It's a different animal. So I totally agree with that. Rams fan Ralph helping me out here. He says, stay the hell off social media. Remember I said this. Thank you, Rams fan Ralph. I appreciate that advice. But how would I have some? I want some ammo. I like to go on Twitter and read some stuff, get myself fired up, help out my boy Anthony Lamb there a little bit. Great moment at the end of that Virginia game, by the way, I have to say, before we do take a quick break. So I don't know if you watched the game, Lamb and Mamadi Diakite, Virginia star. If you know, Mamadi Diakite is one that hit the big shot against Purdue from Kihei Clark and one of the big reasons Virginia won the national championship. Lamb and he were face-to-face, chalking some smack. But when the game was over, there was a great picture on Twitter of Lamb. It looks like he's in the stands with, I think, Lamb and Diakite in the stands. I think it was may have been with Lamb's family. I don't know if there was a family there.
I did see that.
And they were kind of like hugging each other, and it looked like there was a lot of respect from one of the best players in the nation, Diakite, another one of the best players in the nation, Anthony Lamb.
Yeah, that was cool.
Props to UVA and their fan base because they've been nothing but respectful towards UVM. Both before, I've heard Tony Bennett has said very nice things about John Becker before that game even. And also after the game, there were posts about Anthony's performance, and all I saw on it was UVA fans saying, that kid's great, he's got a future.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not? I mean, what Anthony Lamb did against in Charlottesville is one for the ages. I mean, yeah, it really is, and UVM fans need to be excited. You get to watch them all year.
As a powerhouse team and as a team that won the championship last year, they could choose to be prideful about it, and instead they were very kind. So props.
Well, you don't
Good
know
job, UVA Twitter.
You don't know Tony Bennett if you think that, man. Tony Bennett's all class, and he definitely showed enough. And hey, listen, so did John Becker. I mean, what this program's unbelievable, but we'll talk about that some other time. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about Coach K. Another big award for Coach K. He owns another record. We'll talk about that tomorrow, next week, when we come back.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
It was straight struggle bus for me getting out of that last segment. I was talking about things we'll talk next week, next month, next year. But that's what happens when you put some superb cupcakes in front of me, Austin. And I've been looking at this box of cupcakes this whole show. I actually got into one on this, but I had the salted caramel one. Man, those are good. We'll talk more about that during that segment, but I apologize for my net being so inept. Pretty bad, but people are probably used to it if they listen to the show. So 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join this conversation today. 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, same exact number, 802-655-6672. And we have been getting blown up today on the Twitter line, so keep it coming. We appreciate it. Interesting note last night, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Mike Krzyzewski, he broke John Wooden's record for most wins while being ranked number one. With 218 wins he's got in his career with his team number one in the nation. That beat John Wooden, who was at 217. And I was thinking about it coming over this morning. You know, is Mike Krzyzewski the greatest college basketball coach to ever coach in college basketball? I mean, is what he's done, you know, and it made me think about that a little bit. And I there's two Mike Krzyzewskis to me. You know, I feel like there's the Mike Krzyzewski from the 80s and 90s, you know, the Leitner years and the Grant Hill years and the Danny Ferry years and the Johnny Dawkins years that, you know, I remember as a basketball coach, as a young basketball coach down at MSJ when I was coaching in Rutland, you know, I bought every single one of his tapes, his motion offense, all of his books. And then there's Mike Krzyzewski when he started to get involved with the NBA players and national and going the Olympic coaching. And I've watched Mike Krzyzewski's teams play, they say, the last 10 to 12 years. And I feel it's we had the coach that was the motivator trying to build a program, you know, teams that were disciplined, great defensive players, great teams. And now we have a team that looks like, you know, an average NBA team with no discipline. They play very little defense. They really don't look like they have a plan offensively. Tons of talent, which allows him to pile up wins, gets all the top yeah. recruits. So it's interesting how, to me, Krzyzewski, the old Krzyzewski to me may have been. But when you're comparing a guy like John Wooden and Mike Krzyzewski, I just can't put him past John Wooden. When you talk to John Wooden's former players, there was real love there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There was love there. You felt like, you know, and I wasn't around for John Wooden's era, so I don't know, you know, but I've read plenty of John Wooden's books and seen enough documentaries on John Wooden, heard Bill Walton talk about him and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talk about him enough to know what kind of special person he was. John Wooden looked like it was a family, and he was training men. He was, you know, his teams were disciplined, and they were hard workers. Krzyzewski's teams, for me, the last 10, 12, 13 years has been more business to me than anything else.
Yeah, I think you can divide Krzyzewski's teams, his career, into like the first half. So Coach K 1.0 was everything through the Battier years, Shane Battier.
Yeah.
And I think after that, after Battier graduated, that mid-2000s on to now, they became something different. And it's a Coach K 2.0 is more what you're talking about, where he sort of conceded, especially in the last 10 years, conceded to that, like, you know, what Coach Cal had done at his stops, where yes. it was the one-and-done thing, where, you know, okay, we're going to roll the dice with freshmen and see where it takes us. I think you can say, like, as much talent as these recent Duke teams have had come through the doors of Cameron Indoor, that as teams, they are not better teams than those original, like,
not even close,
vintage Krzyzewski teams, for the very reasons you talked about already. Like the, it just, it seems that you can't put as much into a team if the team disintegrates at the end of the season and goes elsewhere. Like,
but even like moments, like I looked at Duke's team like last year in the tournament when they needed to have a basket,
mm-hmm.
things that they run or they don't run to right. get that look, or how poorly defensively they've been over the years. Now, I know they've got a championship somewhere along. I think Okafor's team won a championship. I also noticed all the players that seem to go to the NBA have not been impact players. You know, most of his guys that have gone out in the last 10 years, I mean, except for Kyrie Irving, but he barely played that year. He was hurt most of the year.
Right.
I mean, you know, none of these guys go into the NBA and become impact players.
Well, and that goes all the way back to the beginning.
It's true.
There are few exceptions to that. Where like his college stars were NBA stars. Grant Hill was like maybe the best. Jay Williams had a chance to do that his accident and got injured. Battier had a long, fruitful career. Christian Laettner made a couple hundred million dollars without really ever really being a stud that you thought he would be coming out of college. So that's an ongoing thing.
But when you think of the greatest coaches and you think of Coach Krzyzewski, to me, I guess I think it's two different people. So it's hard for me to get, I feel bad that he's actually passing John Wooden in this, because I feel like John Wooden, his whole career was building, or, you know, his teams were built around great defense, great offense. And when you watch these Duke teams play now, I can't imagine being a basketball coach and saying, you got to watch Duke and watch how they run their man-to-man or watch how they run their motion offense. Right now, it's like you don't want your players to watch anything like this.
Exactly.
To me, you want to watch teams like Vermont. You want to watch a Tony Bennett team. Tony Bennett's style of Virginia.
Formerly John Beilein. In Michigan.
Exactly. Or Villanova with Jay Wright's team. Yep. You know, what's funny, what gets me about this is that Tony Bennett's program got so much smack about not being, you can't win this way. You know, they're not, you know, you got to get up and down the floor. But the discipline that program had and has is what it's made them so special. And that's what makes them a perennial champion. I mean, none of Virginia's guys are five-star guys. You know, the guys that just won, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome, those guys that are in the NBA now, none of those guys were highly touted coming out. I mean, they were three or four stars,
right.
But they're not five stars. That to me says something. But you watch a Virginia team play, and they are disciplined defensively. They run stuff on offense. You watch Duke, Kentucky. There's just nothing to it. There's no substance to it. And that's the stuff that gets me. All right, we have a call now on the line. Matt from St. Albans. Good morning, Matt. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's happening?
You know, with Coach K, it's so interesting because most of the arguments that you could make to support, like, say, you know, argue that he is the best coach of all time, there's, like, the counter-argument that would say he's not and vice versa. So, like, a lot of his players haven't become pros, and so does that mean he's not a great coach because he's not coaching them to be NBA ready, or does that mean he's an even better coach because they won championships without NBA stars? You know, and I think for me the biggest difference between him and Wooden is that I feel like Coach K has kind of compromised his values and his principles, and he's kind of become like a Calipari too. You know, just seeing the success that Kentucky was having with the one-and-dones. And I feel like Coach K kind of gave up on the system that he built and the way he was doing things to try to chase championships. And I actually don't think it's really worked out for him.
I agree with you, Matt. And thank you so much for the call. I totally agree with what Matt just said. And I think it's hurt him winning championships. Because I'm telling you, like, there's something changed with him. And I'll tell you, I think it was as soon as he went and worked with NBA players.
I think
as soon as that happened, he was coaching the U.S. team. In that style of play, he adapted to that. And, I mean, they're just not fun to watch. Last night was a perfect example of that. You know, they're playing a Georgetown team. They should be blowing out. And they're not, because they're not disciplined defensively. They're not disciplined offensively. They all take bad shots. They win with talent, not with his coaching. I think that's crazy to say from a guy that, in my mind, going up till what, you know, whenever we determined Shane Battier leaves, was the best coach in the country.
Yeah, I actually do think Coach K is the greatest college basketball coach of all time. I'm firmly believe that what he did building that program, the way they played. I think the thing that everybody really always gets back to is how he manages players and develops relationships with players and you know, can get more out of players, even when they're great players sometimes, than you would think. Like, just who he is as a person, as a coach, is along the lines of what Wooden did the same way. I think Krzyzewski overtakes Wooden for, you can get into a lot of the structural stuff with Wooden and the way the NCAA worked, where freshmen couldn't play, so you could stockpile players, where it's come out in recent years that there was a pretty substantial behind the scenes, UCLA guys were getting paid by boosters and stuff. So like there were guys on the UCLA program roster that, you know, went there and could have gone elsewhere, but like you add it all up. And so Coach Wooden just had a better toolkit to work with at the end of the day. I try and get inside Coach K's head or what his circumstances. He's 72. So if what's an easier way to win at, you know, when you might be older or, you know, like just have less in the tank than he did 10, 15, 20 years ago. Get guys that can play and play at a high level right away and see where it goes. See if you can harness them and get something out of them. I don't know.
It's hard to argue what you just said, you know, and I see where you're coming from. I just look at a guy it's just two different men. It's just two different leadership in the same person. It's Mike Krzyzewski circa, you know, the years when Jay Bellis was playing there. There's a great, I think it was on ESPN, the game that saved Krzyzewski's job. And they wanted him out at Duke for a couple years. And they had a terrible, I think they had a horrible season. It was 80 something. Ralph Sampson was still playing at Virginia.
So you know, 85, 86, no, somewhere in there.
That was like 84, 83, 82, okay. Whatever it was. The point is, you know, and him built, you just said it, the building of the program at Duke, what he had to do it, the players he's brought in, and I mean, he was it. But now I feel like Duke is a business. And I look at a guy like John Wooden, okay, maybe there was some things going on, and that's not okay. I mean, I didn't realize all that stuff. I get that.
And I think it's been roundly understood that, like, he wasn't behind it, let alone, like, necessarily aware.
I think maybe I'm the reason he ended up going to UConn. I'm just saying. But I feel bad. I shouldn't say that. I look at Mike Krzyzewski and I think, wow, Mike Krzyzewski the last 15 years is not the Mike Krzyzewski we saw before that. And to me, Duke is a business. And I don't look at that team and think, wow, I got to watch Duke play. I wanted to watch Duke play last year because I wanted to see Zion Williamson. Mm-hmm. I watched Duke this year and I think, yeah, there are a lot of good athletes, but boy, this is crap basketball. This is not fun to watch for me. Watching guys run up and down the floor and turn the ball over 30 times and make a couple dunks, hit a couple threes is not fun for me. I think that's why I love watching Virginia, because Virginia's guys can't do that. And you got guys like Kihei Clark and geese like Mamadi Diakite and Braxton Key. I love watching UVM play with these kids that they have. Teams that have to do it the right way fundamentally to make yourself successful.
Are you saying
that.
This because you know Bernie isn't listening right now?
Maybe Bernie would be in my kitchen about this.
Bernie, Bernie.
Yeah. I know Bernie is a dookie, but Bernie's a realistic dookie. He'll tell you when he'll think it's very good.
I even think at those late stage first phase Krzyzewski teams, you'd watch them and you'd be like, they're shooting a lot of threes. And it was like their entire offense was like, try and get dribble penetration. It wasn't the motion stuff that got them famous. It was try and get into the hoop and then try and get defensive offensive rebounds.
Way back just now. Kick.
I'm talking 15 years ago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Where the whole offense was predicated on scoring, or if you don't score, get the offensive rebound, get the kick out, and it's a kick out three. Always a kick out three from an offensive rebound. And they just murdered teams with that. And you're like, is this offense? I don't know. But it works.
It does. And he's won a lot of championships and a lot of games. I mean, you got to give him credit for that. And he just passed John Wooden with 218 wins while his team's been ranked number one. That's unbelievable. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
This might be the best Hot or Not for us personally, because our great sponsor of this segment, Superb Cupcakes, gave us some cupcakes to try. So take it away, my man.
This is Hot or Not. This is Hot or Not brought to you by Superb Cupcakes.
The cupcakes are not hot. They're physically not hot.
No, they're room temperature cupcakes.
Moist,
very moist and delicious.
Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft's Corner Shopping Center for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint. Offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. In celebration of the holiday season, Superb Cupcakes is introducing their Thanksgiving menu with flavors such as pumpkin pie, pecan pie, and sweet potato pie, which is marshmallow buttercream on a sweet potato cupcake with brown sugar.
I already devoured that one.
Austin ate all
Ooh,
of it.
That was nice.
Jerk. I want a piece of that.
Stop by Superb Cupcakes on Black Friday because they'll be open. Unfortunately, they will not be open on Thanksgiving Day, but if you want some Thanksgiving Day cupcakes, go the day before. Their cupcakes stay good for like a week.
So just for the record, these cupcakes were handed to me yesterday by one of the owners, Joe. He handed them to me. I want to say he handed me like at 10 o'clock in the morning yesterday. So and we just ate a couple of those, right? How moist? They feel like they were just made. Do yourself, tis the season to eat this stuff. I'm just telling you.
It's hard to express how good it was. And to think that it was not just completely fresh.
Well, they are in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston. Check them out at Superb Cupcakes. They literally it'll be the best cupcake you've ever had. I swear to you. Right now, Aaron's like trying to be my mother over. He's cutting up the cupcake so we can try it, so we can eat this during the segment.
We're going to start with the first Hot or Not, and while they explain it, I'm going to dish out some cupcakes.
Okay, sounds good.
If you want to watch this, we're on Twitch at twitch.tv/101.
If you want to watch all of us eat cupcakes with getting all over everything,
it'll be fun. No one cares about what the. Actually, we're gonna save that one because that one has sound attached to it. Jacoby Ellsbury's Yankee contract is the worst in baseball history.
That's just not the case. I believe that Carl Crawford's contract with the Red Sox is worse than this one. At least the Yankees got something out of Ellsbury a little bit.
Ellsbury hit over 200.
Yeah, that's very true. It's a bad contract. It was bad when they signed it, but I know why the Yankees did it at the time. The Red Sox were overtaking them, if you remember that year. Mm-hmm. I think they had just come off a world championship. The Yankees were not going. They looked like they were going in the direction. The Yankees wanted to make a move and hit the Red Sox in some way. They did. You know, Ellsbury, look, I mean, it's been a very rough breakup. Obviously, he hasn't done a whole lot the last few years, but Ellsbury gave them some moments.
Yeah.
He's a great player, just unfortunately got the injury bug. And when that happens, you know, this stuff can happen. So yeah, not a great contract for the Yankees, but not the worst in baseball history.
It's up there. I think you could, like you point out, Carl Crawford, who got way too much money for what he ended up producing. I think you also have to talk Albert Pujols.
I agree. That's another good one.
Who got a bajillion dollars.
Alex Rodriguez.
A-Rod. A-Rod. You look at those two guys, and it's the nature of the business is you get paid for as much for services rendered as what you could actually expect.
Right.
You expected more from Ellsbury at that stage of his career than you did Pujols.
And Clark from Plattsburgh reminded us, he's absolutely right. Bobby Bonilla is the worst. I mean, they're still paying Bobby Bonilla.
He hasn't played worse since 2000.
Who? I think it's pretty damn good for Bobby Bonilla.
We're not talking about who's for the player. We're not talking about the players like eating a cupcake right now. We're talking about for the organization. You're right. That is the worst.
He hasn't been a player since 2011.
And he's still getting paid.
Paid.
Is it July 1st? Is Bobby Bonilla Day?
Yeah, I believe so.
Unbelievable.
$1.35 million every year, I think, and he won't be done until 35.
That's
2035.
Jan from Underhill says Jason Bay. Yeah, I mean, but you can't put that up as one of the worst, the Jason Bay contract. That's not, you know. Bobby Bonilla, Carl Crawford, A-Rod. I mean, we can go through a few that beat the Jason Bay one.
All right, I'm going in for the pumpkin pie.
What was the other one?
That's pecan pie.
Pecan pie. I'm going pecan pie.
Unbelievable. These are just, wow. Oh. I'm just going to tell you, do yourself a favor, go to Superb Guys, we eat cupcakes on the air. Unbelievable. These are much better than any of those contracts. I promise you that.
Oh my God.
I'm getting so much pecan there.
It's good.
That pecan pie filling looks so dope.
It really is good stuff. Check them out, Superb Cupcakes. Joe and Hannah are the best.
They're the best. They're one of my favorite sponsors on the station because they gave us food. and they're delicious.
Oh.
All right, moving on. It's not smart for the Giants to play Sterling Shepard coming off his two head injuries.
You know, so if you don't know the situation with Sterling Shepard, he's had two concussions this season. They were pretty close together, too. I think he had a concussion, was off a week, then got concussed again. You know, with where the Giants are right now at 2-8, you got a young kid in Slayton that's shown that he can be a big-time receiver for them. He and Daniel Jones have created some real synergy there. You know, you're 2-8, why play him? Like, why not just sit down the rest of the season, make sure you're healthy for next season? There's really no reason for it. And let this kid get some reps in your position and go forward. If it was a situation where the Giants were fighting for a playoff berth, I'd say something else. But I'd take the rest of the season off if I was Shepard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I say, as an owner of Saquon Barkley in fantasy, if you need an extra receiver, put him out in the slot, but just get him more touches. I got a big matchup. I'm not favored this week. Need a big week out of Saquon to lock down first place in my league for the playoffs.
Not the best matchup with playoffs. The Bears.
No, but he's a generational talent. He's due.
And the Giants
are due.
The Giants are due too, by the way. My goodness.
And the Saquon Barkley take that we just heard from Austin keeps Saquon healthier because catching the ball in the open field is much safer than running into the line.
Exactly.
Very true.
All right, moving on. If Ben Shungu had played against Virginia, UVM would have won.
Go ahead. You can go first.
I'm going to say yes. I think just for ball security and the what he can do with the ball in his hands, and then as much as anything defensively, as we talked about, I think he, like, as good a job as the other guys did, I think he, there's a reason Becker has called him the best on-ball defender he's ever coached. I think you gotta believe he's going to do a little better job against Kihei Clark with a little more size, a little more length, strength, all those things. I think he makes up tired after playing 2 days before Mounts, who were already a little tired after playing 2 days before without one of their three best guards at St. John's. So I think the net effect of him not being there was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was huge. I don't know. I'd have to say not. To me, you know, I mean, when it came to winning time, I think you saw the defending national champions really step their game up, how they do it, and created those turnovers. And Shungu may have made a difference. And the other thing for Virginia, Cody Statman, one of their best three-point shooters, didn't play in that game as well. He was home with the flu. But look, they take nothing away from Vermont. I mean, what they did was spectacular. But I don't know if one player changes that dynamic, especially when it comes down, when I said winning time. I mean, you can say what you want about Kihei Clark and him stopping him. That shot that he made, nobody's going to stop that. It's like Lamb making those bombs. The shots that he made down the stretch wouldn't have mattered who was guarding him. Yeah. In my opinion, but that's just me.
It's such a hard one. I have to say probably not, but just barely. They do not lose on those turnovers, though. That's not how the game goes down if Ben Shungu's in it. I think maybe UVA still hits those shots. It comes down to free throws, and UVM isn't able to get ahead at the end, but they don't lose on those three hideous turnovers if Ben Shungu's in the game.
You know what's kind of cool about talking about Ben Shungu? He's a Burlington kid.
He played at Rice.
Yeah.
You know, played at Rice. We're talking about if Ben Shungu played for Vermont, they would have beaten Virginia.
We're talking about a kid that I've written two Mr. Basketball stories about.
Pretty cool.
Who played in, you know, four Vermont state finals at Patrick Gym.
Pretty cool stuff.
I'm going pumpkin spice right now.
I just ate the pecan pie, and wow. I gotta stop.
All right, this one is a Cowherd, so I just wanna get it up real quick.
Okay.
The computer's taking a long time. Should I just read the take?
Sure.
All right, yeah. The sound's not gonna work out. This is a Colin Cowherd original, though. No one cares about the Patriots outside of New England. As far as like fan bases.
That, no way. Care like they like them? Absolutely not. But they are a lightning rod for the league. You either live in New England and you love them, or maybe like you don't.
Yeah, I don't love them.
You're either Patriots fan and you love them, or you think they're evil, they cheat all the time, and you want to see them lose. So, like, I got to think they move the needle. I don't have the numbers to back it up, but you can't say they don't move the needle.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the NFL would be without them. I mean, you have to have a villain, right? I mean, it's like the Yankees. I mean, where would baseball be without the Yankees? What would basketball be without the Lakers? I mean, you know, you got to have, there's one organization, one team, and the Patriots right now have been the standard bearer forever. So to say that nobody outside New England cares about them, you are based on your successes based on how you do against them. When you're a great team in the NFC, the thing they're talking about is what are you going to do against the Patriots? Yeah, you're good against these guys, but can you beat the Patriots? It's all about the Patriots. I feel like I'm in a Seinfeld episode. The Patriots, the Patriots, the Patriots.
Yeah, that did have a very Seinfeld-y twang. Is the Patriots. And how about the Patriots?
The Patriots.
I agree with Colin's overall point, which is that they're not America's team now. I think they're too disliked by other parts of the country to have enough of a fan base to be.
Yes.
But they do move ratings, not as much as the Cowboys still, which I don't understand that, but it is true that the Cowboys, for some reason, really push TV ratings. It's not that I don't think they deserve to have solid ratings, but they're like far and beyond the most popular team by TV ratings, and that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But America's team came from just the name of the NFL Network, or the football movie that they made on the Cowboys back in the 70s. It wasn't like they're deemed that they're America's team. It was just that's what they named that video.
It clearly came out of like when they were great in the late 60s and 70s. There was just as TV was becoming a thing, so like national broadcasts, people could watch them from all around the country.
Right.
Be like, ooh, that's like, I guess I'm a Cowboys fan. And then you go a generation later, they win the three Super Bowls with Aikman and Emmitt Smith and
Michael Irvin.
And so that resuscitated that for another generation. I think if they don't win again in the next 5 or 6 years, that is probably going to die out, just, you know, yeah, go with the way of the dodo.
That makes sense. What I don't agree with from Colin Cowherd very strongly is the he made it sound like if you don't live directly in New England, there's not no real following. My argument with that wouldn't be that as a, like a Homer Patriots fan, I think that's wrong. They show out well in other parts of the country, and for that reason, I don't buy that point he made.
Absolutely.
I think you always see a strong showing of Pats fans at away games for some, like, I don't totally know why, but it's winning. It's the reality.
Teams that win, their fans go.
Same thing with the Red Sox. I've been to Red Sox games in multiple cities, not called Boston, that it's
of course,
you know, you're surrounded by mostly Red Sox fans. It's a thing.
All right. And we'll end it off with Thanksgiving is the greatest American holiday.
Go ahead. You can go first.
I'm pretty high on Thanksgiving. I don't know what really comes close. Because, I mean, what else is in the discussion? Memorial Day.
Christmas.
Christmas is it's
4th of July.
4th of July, Labor Day.
Yeah.
The best eats are Thanksgiving.
I mean, I'm going to say not because I'm not a huge turkey Thanksgiving kind of guy. I mean, I love, you know, the eating is fun, but I'm not like, I don't love turkey dinner. I think the 4th of July is the best. I love the 4th of July. It's a full day party. I love the fireworks. I love the parades. I love the red, white, and blue and the flags everywhere. I love that. So I would say that's first, Thanksgiving second.
I have to go 4th of July too, just because for me, is this personally or is this like in terms of its reputation around the country? Because personally, I go 4th of July just because my family has a cool tradition. We go up to my uncle's and we eat a bunch of barbecue. And I absolutely love barbecue food. And yeah, I also love my uncle. So
There you go.
But I think Thanksgiving is such a big deal. The food is like spending time with your family, eating all that food is so cool.
And it's not the food.
And the Cowboys are on. The Cowboys
and
are
the Lions.
On.
It's always the Lions too, right?
For me, it's the food and also the fact that it's one of the few times of the year that a lot of people get back together.
Sure, it's true.
I think that's what always put it over the top for me. Like, it was always great in college to have everybody come back home and you get to meet
that's
up
very
at least
good
for
point
a night.
As well.
Which, you know, thanks Christmas time, it might be a little more fluid, but Thanksgiving, it was very concentrated and right there and accessible.
That's, you know what? Now that you say that,
it's the couple days.
Maybe I like that. Then maybe you change my mind. All right. That's Hot or Not this week. Listen, and thanks to Superb Cup. Because, I mean, before we go to break, to Tom from Salisbury just said, I just got out of an interview in Wilson. I'm going over right now to grab a pecan pie cupcake. That a boy, Tom. We appreciate that.
You will not be disappointed.
It was intensely delicious. I'll say that.
We'll take a break, come back, and tie a bow on this show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
When we were talking about all the great American holidays, Bobby Bonilla Day. I mean, we should have put that in there as well.
That's not for everybody.
One guy loves that. Bobby Bonilla. I mean, whoever organized and like negotiated that contract should get, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I would assume his agent is getting, if he's getting $1.3 million a year for Infinity.
What, like 10% of that?
His agent's getting $130,000
a year.
Just
think about when he pulls this off and he goes back, goes, Bobby, just to let you understand, like you're getting paid for the next, you know, 100 years, whatever it is, whatever it breaks down to.
Annuitize, baby.
It's unbelievable.
Let's do it.
Good for Bobby Bonilla. Good for Bobby Bonilla.
The stats that come out on those days are great. Like, there are two All-Stars this year made less than Bobby Bonilla. Yeah. That stat was amazing.
All right, the Green City Garage poll question. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington. Phone number 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace. The Green City Garage poll question today at Twitter was, by the end of the season, UVM men's basketball will be in the top 25. At the top of the hour, I think it was more that people said no. What is it now, Aaron?
53% say yes, they will be in the top 25 by the end of the year. So
They've seen the light.
Listen, this team deserves that kind of respect, I think. You know, if they do what we think they're going to do, I think it's going to be a special year for them. So, big plans for Thanksgiving, boys. What are we doing for Thanksgiving? What's going on?
Going back to my parents' house in Hubbardton.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Hang out in the... I think I'm on the hook to make some carrots. They're carrots cooked in apple cider and maple syrup.
Oh, excuse me.
You top it with pistachio and thyme and ricotta cheese. It's fantastic.
No, I'm stealing that.
No Thanksgiving taco for you.
No. But you could do leftovers in the taco.
Leftovers.
Yeah. How about you, Aaron? What's happening for you for Thanksgiving?
My mom's going to cook. We're having as much of the family as we can over, and I'm going to eat myself to death.
My cranberry sauce has jalapenos in it.
Well, of course it does. And then a little taco, too, little taco Thursday for you. For Thanksgiving, just for the record, at Romanto's, you know, we have our Thanksgiving pizza that we do all month of November. If you haven't had that, it's a garlic mashed potato base with roasted turkey, stuffing, and then we in gravy, then we finish it with mozzarella. When it comes out, we hit it with cranberry sauce. One of the biggest sellers we have all year. People love it. So if you haven't tried it, stop down to Romanto's.
Do you want me to give you that cranberry sauce recipe?
No. I'm not messing. I'm not messing with my Thanksgiving pizza. Okay. I'm not doing it. But maybe personally like to have it.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We are here every Saturday from 10 to noon. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. We appreciate you listening. And thanks. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Enjoy this week with your family. Austin made a great point when we were trying to decide what would the best American holiday. It's about coming together with your family and friends, relaxing, enjoying your time. Just enjoy it. And a really quick, before we go, rest in peace, Jake Burton, a very difficult loss for our community in Vermont. Jake Burton, the founder of Burton Snowboards, passed away this week. He was a great man. He was an unbelievable person. I had plenty of people that worked for him in the early days that I knew that had nothing but great things to say. So rest in peace, Jake Burton. Enjoy the rest of your week. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you next week.